Welcome to another installment of the Flagrant Take. I'm your co-host, James. And where's my host? Fred, sit down. Come on, sit down. Don't get fired like Billy Bush.
Wait. All right, Billy made me do it. What can I say, man?
Just sit down, all right? Let's just get this.
Week 7, lucky number 11. I know,
Chris.
And still, we are in
Chris,
preseason.
Thanks for not firing us yet. It's only preseason, so it's great.
I changed my address so the pink slip will never show up to my location.
Nice. Your pink slip.
Hey, man.
Oh, man.
I'm going to work this system, dog.
Oh, man. Well, welcome back, guys. Thanks for tuning in. We've been trying to market it as much as possible, promote it. And here we are on the 7th episode. Right, Fred?
That's right. It's your favorite Man Crush Mondays, everybody. Fred Johnson and Jimbo.
Oh, my gosh. You want to dive in right away? Or how was your day?
Oh, yeah. Let's hit them with the small talk edition right now. No, my day was good, man. It's, you know, Tuesday. Tuesday's like I am pretty much assured that Tuesday is always the worst day of the week,
yeah.
Right? Because you're still not even, you know, you're not at hump day, you're definitely not even close to the weekend, and it's not Monday, so it's, you know, so close yet so far away day, which is officially Tuesday.
We're almost at Thursday.
That was
my
Tuesday.
And the weekend comes around, you know?
Absolutely, man. And then the weekend goes by too fast, thanks to the alcohol, and, you know, and then you're back again. Here we are.
Listen,
so,
Fred.
It's all good, man. But number 7, how's that New York City transit treating you, bro?
Oh, man, it's the worst.
All right. Well, since we've put everybody in a great mood, and they're like, oh, wow, we're so glad we're listening to this show. And it may be their first time, but thank you guys for checking us out, supporting the show. We have a slew of topics that we're going to dive into for you guys. So, Jimbo, go ahead and tee up the first one.
All right, we got Milwaukee Bucks and Chicago Bulls reach a deal for Michael Carter Williams in exchange for Tony Snell. And that, with that being said, Tony Snell has been averaging 5-3 last season, and Michael Carter Williams actually was harnessed by Jason Kidd last year. It lowered his turnover rate and averaged 12-5-5. What do you think about this
trade? I actually really like this trade, man. A huge fan of this trade. In regards to the Milwaukee Bucks acquiring, you know, Tony Snell, who's a two-guard/three who can defend very well, 6'7" with an extremely long wingspan, I think he's going to be a great addition and somebody who fits in the mold. Listen, we've talked about the Milwaukee Bucks ad nauseum in reference to what they're building, which is a team full of versatile guys, predominantly wing players who can stretch the defense on offense and defensively can just absolutely switch on every screen that's thrown at them. In regards to the Chicago Bulls, they get themselves a relatively young point guard who has proven himself in the league and, you know, somebody that's going to help them move on from the Derrick Rose era. So I'm absolutely a big fan of this trade.
Well, overall, I think the Bucks, I was kind of shocked about it. I thought Michael Carter-Williams made some strides last year in terms of lowering his turnover rate, being coached by Jason Kidd, as I stated earlier. But now they're going to pencil in Tony Snell as a two-guard, considering Chris Middleton will be out. They got Michael Beasley now, so I think Tony Snell will actually flourish. Now, with the Bulls acquiring Michael Carter-Williams, I'm not sure how he'll fare. You got Rondo there, you got Wade, you got Butler. All these guys are slashers, and they don't shoot threes, and he's part of that, you know, part of that mold, basically. He's a passer, more of a drive and kick guy, but see how it goes. I don't know what the Bulls are doing, but, you know, if they have four slashers on the team, I thought Tony Snell would have been a great player to extend the floor out, a three-point shooter. They lost Mike Dunleavy as well. So it was a head-scratcher for the Bulls, in my opinion, but for the Bucks, I thought it was a lot of potential involved. So that's my view on it.
Yeah, I think this just gives the Bulls insurance for when they inevitably cut ties with Rondo after this upcoming season.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And don't take on that additional $14 million for that second year of his contract.
Yeah, I mean, okay, that makes sense. All right, that makes sense. But basically, it's a risk for the Bucks. And for the Bulls, I don't know, it's a head scratcher. It's not a risk for the Bucks. I think it's a safe haven for them. They got loads of talent on that team, as we have spoken about a couple of weeks in nauseam about it, you know? So,
well, the Bulls needed more depth at the point guard.
Yeah.
And in regards to the Bucks, listen, we had already talked about it before in regards to the fact that Giannis Antetokounmpo can actually ball handle and play a little bit of point guard. So now you're talking about, you know, Giannis Antetokounmpo being your primary ball handler in a lot of likely scenarios. And then you also have, you know, he's going to be flanked by Jabari Parker, Tony Snell in certain instances. there's chances now, you know, Michael Beasley could even play the four, not in the starting lineup, but you're going to see different variations now where I think you're going to see Giannis Antetokounmpo play more guard than you will see him play forward.
I love how
now.
You pronounce his name. It's amazing. Because I would have just ended up with Giannis Ante.
Hey, man, I'm an English all major, right. Brother. We're all about accuracy.
Let's move on, all right? The Cleveland Cavaliers and J.R. Smith have reached a four-year, $57 million deal.
Back up the Brinks
last
truck.
Last season, he averaged 12, 3, and 2. Oh, man, we were dead wrong on these contracts.
Back
go ahead.
Up the Brinks truck.
What do you think about
this?
Hey,
man, somebody needs to tell LeBron James and Clutch Sports to take the ski mask off because they are playing stick-up with this Cavaliers front office, man.
I think I read it. Yeah,
the day that J.R. Smith making averaging 14 and a quarter
out of control.
Tristan Thompson getting dang near 20
a year.
He's basically averaging 8 and 8. Hey, man. LeBron James is the ultimate stick-up kid, man. Mm. Oh, my gosh. Overall, listen, I was off by about 4 or 5 days in regards to my time that I gave, you know, for the Cavaliers to re-sign J.R. Smith. I remember we even talked about a potential one-year $13 million deal and them coming back to the table and revisiting, you know, after this upcoming season. But my gosh, man, 4 years, $57 million for a player who absolutely is key to your rotation. And clearly, LeBron just pulled the ultimate Trump move. Remember when, you know, they signed Tony Douglas and people wondered if that was a sign to the Cavs saying we're just moving on from the situation altogether and they were prepared to move on from J.R. Swish. But no, not at all. We are on the eve of another season, and another one of LeBron's boys gets paid. So, hey, man, you can't deny the
game. We were both wrong on the one-year deals. I think I said $12 million. We got to go back a couple of podcasts. I think you said $13 million. So you were the closest one. In any sense or fashion, he was $2 million overpaid, regardless of what he's actually worth. But you know, now the Cleveland Cavaliers starting lineup has, I'm sure, I don't know the data to this, but they must have a bigger, you know, salary cap for this year than an entire NBA team. Maybe the Sixers. I'm going to just throw it out there. I got to check the numbers out. But
Sixers aren't even
exactly
touching
the cap. I'm sure the Cavs are way over, but their starting five must be over the whole Sixer team. We got to look at that data. We'll check it out next week.
Well, Cavs were already at the record last
year. Yeah, so they just
they've only added.
They only just added
so
on top.
I'm going to say that they've set a new record in regards to salary cap, and they will be the ultimate repeater when it comes to the luxury tax. I mean, listen, man, you got to pay to continue to win. You got to pay to play, and the Cavs are showing that by hook or by crook, or by the force of one LeBron James, they're going to be paying. So,
what it really comes down to is you got to be in LeBron's corner. I think that's what good things happen when you're in LeBron's corner. How about
hey,
that?
Man, be LeBron's friend and become a millionaire. I think that's a pretty good. I could sign up for that right now.
All right, let's move on.
Seriously, I'll give out my address for that one. Not to Chris, but I'll give it up for LeBron if LeBron needs, you know, personal security or, you know, somebody to fight Twitter battles for him.
Listen, man,
like
LeBron,
just,
LeBron,
just
if you
want
to download this podcast, be my guest. All right?
We'll change the name.
We're going to go to New York. Carmelo Anthony is feeling disrespected by being ranked 15th on the SlamDunk.com player ranking. Some of the notable players that are ahead of him, James Harden, Paul George, DeMarcus Cousins, which is a head-scratcher, Damian Lillard, CP3, Kyrie Irving, Klay Thompson, and Blake Griffin. The top six, I'm not sure. I Googled it right on pre-production, Fred. But you can assume what the top six is off the top of your head if you wanted to. So go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Well, first of all, in the words of Carmelo Anthony, Slam Magazine played themselves. Listen, man, when it comes to 15th overall, I understand the position he's in where you're a player who still feels like, you know, you're in your prime, but your regular season numbers haven't shown it. But then you look at your body of work and you're arguably, you know, one of the more critically acclaimed players in the game still. I can see where there's the frustration, but you got to look at it, Melo. Your team hasn't been contending for playoff spots. Your seasons have been cut short due to injury. I mean, you still got to find ways to earn your keep and maintain your name. And I'm a huge Carmelo Anthony fan. I've gone on the record to say that. But honestly, I would say 15 is generous, to be quite honest with you. And, you know, I wish I had the list right in front of me, but when you're talking about a Blake Griffin who had an injury-marred season last year, but we've seen Blake Griffin do it in the playoffs, you know, in recent years, and, you know, video game Dame and what he was able to do to put, you know, the Trailblazers on his back, and Clay and all these guys. Listen, when it comes to professional sports, it's what have you done for me lately? And honestly, Melo, Rio Olympics notwithstanding, not a whole lot when it comes to the NBA.
No, I agree. I mean, you know, he hasn't made the playoffs in the past. The New York Knicks haven't made the playoffs in the past two seasons. They've had a horrible track record in terms of the past, you know, in the short term with Carmelo Anthony's career. That being said, I think 15 was rightly situated. I thought it was the right place. It was actually very, how do I say it? It was basically right on point with and par with the season. And it wasn't too, I didn't think it was disrespectful. It was right there. I mean, he averaged, I think, 22, 8, and 5. He had a good passing year, but I wouldn't expect him. I thought they would rank him at 22 or 25. But with that being said, I mean, come on. Some of those names on that list, Harden, Paul George, Cousins, Lillard, CPT Irving, Clay. These guys are all playoff caliber, well, are on playoff caliber teams, except for DeMarcus Cousins. And I would have switched. I probably would have put Cousins at 14 or at 16 if you're gonna gauge him like that. But I thought Melo was situated at the right place. I know New York Knicks fans. I know there was a connection last week when you know, they found out that Melo was 15. Everyone was having this discussion on how Blake was worse than Melo. I thought it was the right place. I mean, if you're in, there's a lot of credibility that's involved that is lost when you don't get to the playoffs, you know? And he needed that. And unfortunately, the past two seasons he hasn't. I think he's situated at the right place. He has been slipping throughout his since his tenure. He has been slipping. But with that being said, he was right where he's supposed to be. He shouldn't be disrespected. But I hope this motivates him to play better. Let's put it that way.
Well, I tell you what, man. Melo at 15, but number 16 is Draymond Green. And I actually have some argument about that. Because I would say Draymond, for all intents and purposes, has been better than Melo from what we've seen the past couple of seasons as far as the incline that he's been on and the fact that he's a player that continued to emerge. And I would say he's borderline superstar status.
Yeah, probably not this season, but I think the past two seasons he was like a mini LeBron, basically, and I agree with that. So it was situated at the right place. If you're not a fanatic as a fan, you would get it, you know? But if you're, like, so impulsive with, you know, and delusional with what they're going to do and what Melo is, you got to be fun. You know, you got to have some tunnel vision in terms of justifying him at 15, you know?
And it's only going to get more and more difficult, man. I remember Kobe Bryant taking issue when he was listed 24th for ESPN, and he went from 24 to 48, and it only continued to go downhill.
Yeah, exactly. So it's all right.
Melo has to get it in gear.
I'm pulling
brother.
For you, Melo. I'm a big fan of you, buddy. All right. Let's go next. We'll stay in New York. Carmelo Anthony wants to revamp the D-League as part of the CBA deal. In quote, if I had it my way, I'd rebrand the D-League. I'd rebrand it so it isn't a punishment. End quote. What do you think?
See how the NBA, you know, the developmental league could be viewed as a punishment. Honestly, it's a haven for young players who may not have the opportunity to, you know, make it right to the league right out of, you know, college, but have had acclaimed college careers. And, you know, you look at a guy right now in Perry Ellis, who was at Kansas last year, who may not make the Charlotte Hornets roster, but he's going to get this opportunity to continue playing and having, you know, the eyes of the scouts from the NBA on him here domestically, as opposed to going overseas and playing. You look at Augustine from Notre Dame, who's been with the Lakers in training camp. And I would say that it's actually done some good for a lot of guys, honestly, to get that opportunity. Pierre Jackson, you know, just to name off a couple of guys here who have been able to have that opportunity to go play in the developmental league, build a name for themselves, and then have the opportunity to get these training camp invitations. I think it should also be utilized more for rehab stints for these players as well. You know, who, you know, say they have a game or have a injury, excuse me, where they're coming off of being out 20, 25 games, instead of plugging them right into that competition, just like Major League Baseball players do AAA stints when they're coming off of the DL. So I would say it would be something that you could view in regards to rehabilitation stints, but I've never viewed it as a punishment.
No, I don't think it's a punishment per se, but maybe to the players it is. And I think what he means by the quote, it's a very small sample size, but in terms of rebranding the D-League so it's not a doesn't look like a punishment for the players, and maybe he, I'm assuming this, but maybe whether it's the way they market it, whether it's the way they get paid off. I know they get paid very little to play in the D-League based off of a couple of articles I read over the summer, so maybe they need to pay, you know, increase the pay where, you know, other players don't view them like that. But with that being said, you hit some couple of good points. Players have actually been very successful in the D-League and have actually contributed to the professional NBA teams. Tim Frazier, for example. That's the first one that tops off my head. He played very well for the D-League. Now he's probably going to be the starting point guard for the Pelicans. I didn't draft him in my fantasy league, and I'm very disappointed in that. But, you know, it's been a blessing in disguise for these players. And I understand what Melo's saying. It just has to be rebranded for the players when they go down. It's not like a demerit, but it's mostly likely like we're trying to fine-tune your skills. I think that's what he's talking about when it comes to rebranding.
Well, I can absolutely understand that, and I think that it should be a way in which they're able to, you know, rebrand it in the sense that, you know, it's viewed as this haven for players to be able to come and improve upon their game. But also, when I'm looking at the three tiers of salaries that are $13,000, $19,000, and $25,500, those are the three tiers of salaries. And think about this. Some of these guys may not be college graduates, but they had stints in college. And their actual profession that they were working towards were professional sports. You know, it was basketball. And so now you're talking about a kid coming out of college, maybe with 3 years of college experience, or maybe even four with a bachelor's. And the most that they can make is $25,500.
Yeah, I agree. They got to increase that up, man. With the amount of travel these guys do and the working out, et cetera, et cetera.
I would absolutely love to see an increase in salary and would love to see what they are willing to do in regards to the players' union. Because I think if you're, you know, the owners are going to come to them and say, well, if you want these players to make more, what are you willing to give up to better their situation?
Yeah, and we aren't saying make millions or whatever the case is, like a minimal, like in the NBA, but maybe like, let's say $50,000, $40,000. It's not going to harm them. I think it should be just enough money for them in terms of traveling from town to town on a bus, just feeding their families just in case. You don't know what their backgrounds are. So with that being said, I think it's just right in the middle right there. I mean, you're with the booming TV revenue and stuff, I'm sure you can shed off $20,000 to $30,000 per player, but who knows? Maybe the numbers don't add up. It's up to Adam Silver.
They're going to have to make it an issue when they come to the table.
All right, let's move on. Steve Kerr, if Michael Jordan played in the Twitter era, it would have ended in more slights and more titles. Let me clarify that for the people that are listening. Basically, there'd be more fuel to the fire, and as a result, that would end in more title runs for Michael Jordan. So he would end up with more than 6 rings. In Steve Kerr's view. What do you think about this,
Brad? I don't agree with this statement at all, to be honest with you, because, you know, in regards to Michael Jordan's career, slights are not. Who's to say that he would have been able to beat the Detroit Pistons?
Yeah, no. He was young. He was too young.
So he was going to end their reign sooner? That was going to get him in the weight room sooner? I don't believe that. And I don't think that it would have changed the fact that he walked away from the game after they beat the Phoenix Suns. After the 1993 season, and that opened the door for the Houston Rockets to have their back-to-back, you know, run. And, you know, when it came to him returning and them having another three-peat, I don't think any of that changes the narrative of Michael Jordan, because it had no outside influence. It was a part of the game, and it was the natural progression that he went through as an NBA player. But he wasn't going to overtake those Celtics any sooner. He wasn't going to overtake the LA Lakers any sooner. He wasn't going to overtake the Bad Boy Pistons any sooner. So I absolutely disagree with this. Now, how this would have affected his exit, you know, after they had that second three-peat and there was the lockout and he decided to walk away from the game in 99, I hope, if anything, social media would have stopped him from coming back and being a Washington Wizard.
Yeah, that's true. That Wizards run was great for me as a player.
For you as a player?
I was trying to gather my thoughts, as usual. But for me, when I was a teen, I could finally see him. When I was, it was 96, 97, I was only like 6 or 7. But when he came back for the Wizards, I was 14. I could probably be like, wow, this is Jordan. But obviously it was Jordan with, like, you know, training wheels on. Not training wheels, but, you know.
It was YMCA.
Yeah, exactly.
It was YMCA.
Exactly.
Yeah, man. Listen, I had the pleasure of being... I got to see him in his, you know, 98 farewell tour when he came down to Atlanta and played the Hawks, and my mom actually let me, you know, get out of school on that Friday, and we made the trip down, and I was able to stay with my cousin, and, you know, it was a star-studded event, man. It was phenomenal. That was Mike as Mike. I could have done without the, you know, the Washington Wizard years.
I mean, it would have ended, his career average would have been a lot more higher, with that being said. And as per the topic, I think, I mean, I don't agree with Kerr either, because I know he had the, you know, if he didn't leave... If he didn't leave the league after the last, the third championship, no, what was it, the fourth championship, right? The third championship, I think he would have.
The gambling scandal
with David Stern.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist, I'm messing around.
David Stern might have shoveled him away, but I think he could have won 8 rings, but I don't think it's because of an error in terms of social media. I think he had a lot more fuel to the fire in terms of the Knicks, Pat Riley, you name it, everybody hated him. So I think it was a lot more. You know, it doesn't matter if social media, I think a lot more players and coaches got under his skin, and he learned over time, as you said, the Pistons loss in the finals and whatnot. So I feel like it wouldn't have made a difference. He might have won 8 championships without any, if he didn't have a gap and went to baseball. But, you know, I don't agree with what Steve Kerr says. As you said, this is the, you know, dog days of the season where people don't know what to say because it's preseason, there's not much action going on. So, people say crazy stuff.
Listen, Mike's the ultimate competitor, but Twitter is a savage, and Twitter is undefeated, like Father Time. I don't know if he could win that battle, man, and I don't think that you use that as motivation.
Exactly. But with that being said, I like the Wizards Jordan. He was the man. He did screw up the development of Rip Hamilton, though, I remember. And Larry Hughes.
And Kwame Brown. Rip Hamilton. Rip Hamilton still got a championship.
We got to stop doing this, giving plugs to, you know, lower tier players that were busts. We keep doing this.
I mean, go figure. Just think about Kwame Brown's psyche. Not only did you have to play for Michael Jordan and get berated every day, you played with Kobe Bryant.
I know, right?
And got berated every single day.
The worst.
Man, shout out to Kwame Brown. Give him a hug.
All right, let's move on. Now, this is just an opinion question. The next couple are going to just be opinion questions. But what do you think the OKC Thunder record will be at the end of the season? And do you think they'll make the playoffs or not?
41-41, and they will be the 7th seed.
Ooh, interesting. I said 500 as well, but I think the West is going to be a lot stronger.
I don't think the West is as strong as people have notoriously thought that they have been, if that's the best way to word it. I don't think the West is honestly that strong. As I'm going through these standings right now, looking at a lot of these teams, I'm really not impressed in regards to the Western Conference right now. I mean, obviously the Spurs, you don't imagine that a Popovich system is just going to drop off the face of the earth without Tim Duncan, but Golden State, of course, is going to be the favorite, but once you get past those two teams, now you're depending on the health of the Clippers. You imagine OKC is going to take a step back. Dallas somehow always finds their way into the playoffs. Portland surprised a lot of people. But then you have a couple teams. You know, what's Houston going to do?
I think Houston's
going to
do well.
You know, are teams like Utah and Minnesota ready to emerge? And I don't want to give too much away now because I know we have a Dark Horse segment coming up later. But I think there's just a lot in regards to parity once you get past the first, you know, 3 teams in the Western Conference. So I don't think it's necessarily a matter of strength. I think it's a matter of parity.
Coaching is a big key to the Wolves, and I think they'll do well. With that being said, I think OKC will end up as the 8th seed, and I think, obviously, the playoffs. I just think they have a lot of big men. They have Oladipo. They got Westbrook. You know, they lost Durant. But with that being said, I think it'll be great. And
did they? Kevin Durant's not with
basically,
Oklahoma City anymore?
It should.
When did that happen?
But I think, with that being said, I think Westbrook's going to go bonkers next year. I think they'll rally around Donovan. Donovan was a good coach, too, last season. So I think they'll be able to sneak in on the 8th seed, and it should be good. Should be exciting.
Russell Westbrook, has had a history of knee injuries, and I think once he even got his face caved in by the Portland Trail Blazers when KD was out with foot injuries. I just worry about his ability to hold up being the man over the course of an 82-game season. I love his effort and energy. I just worry that he's going to eventually give out and that his body can't withstand the punishment that it's going to take trying to carry a team into the postseason.
So you're saying are you going to call it right now on this podcast that he's going to get injured because of his usage rate is going
to
be ridiculous?
No, I'm not wishing that on anybody. But I will say that he can't afford to miss more than 10 games or else his team has absolutely no chance to make it to the playoffs.
Gotcha. So you're saying they're going to make...
Yeah, 41-41, seventh seed. They'll win a tiebreaker with
I think they're going to be eighth seed. I think you're underestimating the West.
Well, we'll talk about our dark horses here in a moment, man. What we got next on top?
We got your buddy Snapchat's finest, D'Angelo Russell. What are your expectations this season about him? I saw a couple of preseason games. He's been averaging 21-5-2 in about 30 minutes. He's been doing well, so I wanted your input on this.
My man, D'Angelo Russell, a.k.a. Cheaters, the old reality show. Do you remember that show? It's on like WGN where they would catch people cheating and have surveillance camera footage. Anyway, in any event, I digress. D'Angelo Russell, man, has been balling out since the summer league, man. And, you know, Luke Walton has pretty much come in, told him that it's a complete clean slate from the Byron Scott era. And, you know, for him to just take this as an opportunity to grow and develop not only as a player but a leader. And D'Angelo seems to be taking the bull by the horns. And, you know, you see him at times going 6-for-19. But overall, he's been, you know, highly efficient as a scorer. And has absolutely been the catalyst. I still want to see this passing, you know, the numbers in regards to his assists come up. Because obviously coming out of the draft, the previous year, all we heard about was his vision. Rick Pitino going so far as to say he was the best passing guard that he had seen since Magic Johnson. So I still need to see that aspect of his game. Because that's supposed to be the trait that is, you know, making him a superior athlete in regards to his scouting report. But in regards to the numbers he's been putting up, man, he's been nothing short of phenomenal, and he has the whole Laker fan base excited, and of course, Clarkson's been doing his thing as well. Julius Randle and Larry Nance Jr. continue to give you flashes as they trade off nights where one looks better than the other and vice versa, and it's also allowing for Brandon Ingram to kind of come along slowly. But what I love about Ingram is Ingram's showing some good instincts out there on the court. But going back to Russell, I think he absolutely is going to be somebody that's going to average anywhere from, you know, 18 to 19 points a game. I'm hoping somewhere in the realm of 7 to 8 assists a game. And, you know, I really want to see how he improves as a defender. Yeah. I know he really worked on his post game as a 6'5" point guard. He's going to be bigger than most. He's not necessarily the quickest, so he's going to try to find different ways to get himself high percentage shots by operating out of the post.
I think he's going to try to get his own this season. He had probably playing on an edge based off of what Byron Scott did in terms of sabotaging the Lakers last year. So I think he's going to try to get his, but with that being said, I think Luke Walton's going to make some adjustments in his game and try to mentor him in the right directions. I think he'll do a great job in coaching this team, and I think he'll harness D'Angelo Russell. By second half, he should be averaging probably like 18-8, but for the first half, I think he'll be mostly scoring, tinkering with this young lineup, and trying to figure out what to do. But clearly in the preseason, he's the real deal. He's what they drafted on.
Absolutely.
And it's unfortunate that we lost a season of D'Angelo Russell, because the only thing we remember from last season is the Snapchat thing, but, you know, we'll see how it goes. But his trajectory is definitely going up. It's going to be a steep...
Absolutely. Two quick points, and then we'll wrap up this topic. In regards to last year, you're absolutely right. The second half of his season last year was phenomenal. If you go back and look at the tape, his numbers went up across the board. And number two, Byron Scott didn't sabotage last season. That's just his lack of a coaching He's just a bad coach. That had nothing to do with him actively trying to get them to lose games. No, he's just a bad coach. So, you know, it actually worked out in the Lakers' favor in regards to keeping their draft pick.
All right, let's go next. How do you think the Charlotte Hornets will do this season?
Well, as I am a student of the Charlotte Hornets, no, I'm just kidding. a team that lost Jeremy Lin in the offseason, who went to the Brooklyn Nets, and Big Al Jefferson is now with the Indiana Pacers. There's a little bit of turnover as they were They gave Nicholas Batum a $122 million contract, which, like I always say, it's not what you worth, what you're worth. It's what you have the power to negotiate. I look at this team right now, and I still say that they could be, you know, a seventh seed team. Kemba Walker is just phenomenal. He is the player that Michael Jordan had been hoping he would hit a home run on in regards to drafting. Even going back to his days of drafting Adam Morse and out of Gonzaga. He just wants somebody with that grit and that fight, and Kemba absolutely embodies that. I'm hoping that finally they can get a healthy season out of Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. And hopefully Marvin Williams can prove that off the bench he can still be that sharpshooter that they need. But they also lost Courtney Lee as well as he went to the New York Knicks. So there's a lot that I'm going to be looking for in regards to seeing if, you know, guys like Zeller can continue to improve. Will a Perry Ellis actually make the team? I know we spoke about him in regards to the developmental league. But, you know, there's a lot of question marks still on that team. And when you lose pieces like Al Jefferson and Courtney Lee and Jeremy Lin, it may not seem like these are big holes that they need to fill, but you find that, you know, these guys just fit the system of Steve Clifford so well that when you don't properly replenish those roles, that there's going to be some type of drop-off. So I'm actually interested to see what they can do. I absolutely still believe that they could be a fringe playoff team out east, but I think that they've definitely taken a slight step back.
So what do you think their record will be, and do you think they'll make the playoffs?
Next year I could see them being 38-44.
38-44, so you don't expect them to make the playoffs.
I could see them competing for an AFC. It's the Eastern Conference, man. I mean, at the end of the day, it's the Eastern Conference, and sometimes sub 500 records can get you in. When you look at the East, and especially the tail end back into that Eastern Conference, there's just so much parity, man, to be honest with you. You know, I think they're more top-heavy than the Western Conference. But at the back end, I think there's definitely a drop-off.
Okay, well, in my opinion, I think they'll be around 41-41. They'll make it to the eighth seed. I know they lost Al Jefferson, Jeremy Lin, and Courtney Lee, but I feel like Kemba's going to take a big step. Nicholas Batum will take a bigger, an even bigger step. I'm a little biased on that because I drafted him so on my fantasy team.
Let's hope. I don't know, man. A lot of general managers think that
Nicholas... a perfect storm, basically, but I think Kidd Gilchrist is finally healthy. Hopefully his shoulder issues are getting better. His jump shot doesn't look that great in preseason. Frank Kaminsky is going to do great. He's going to improve. Cody Zeller, good seven-footer. He played well in college. They have Marvin Williams, as you said, Ramon Sessions, Spencer Hayes. I think this team can actually make the eighth seed with if a couple of players step up. You notice how I didn't say Roy Hibbert?
Yeah, that was. I think that omission was absolutely
thank you.
Fitting.
Thank you,
yeah, no, I trust me, as a Laker fan, we didn't have Roy Hibbert last year either, so it's okay. Well, he just happened to be the starting center.
I think they'll make the. I think they'll sneak into the playoffs. I think the East is a lot weaker than the West, and with that being said, I think they have a chance, an opportunity to sneak in. As I said before, I think Kidd Gilchrist is the key to this team. Because they need that third guy now that they lost Lin, Jefferson, and Courtney Lee. Some big, viable pieces. So some people got to fill in the holes, but I think they have an opportunity. Steve Clifford's actually was in 1995 to 99. He used to coach at a local college near my town in Garden City, Adelphi University. So am I biased? Yes, I am. I'm looking forward to the former Adelphi coach making some moves with this team. So...
So who's better, Charlotte Hornets or Oklahoma City Thunder? Because you have them both going 41-41.
That was a good one. Checkmate. Yeah, I think OKC's better.
Okay, see, that's why I have that you know, the difference right there in regards to the, you know, when I'm looking at records, AFC versus AFC, and I view the Eastern Conference as a drop-off, that's why I got to drop them down in wins, because I can't say that they're, you know, a fringe team and then put them on par with my AFC out west.
Yeah,
but
I understand.
You know, we'll see what happens, man. The games are, you know.
No, but you know what it is. I just think they're. I think the issue is that historically the Eastern Conference has been worse in general. So, and I feel like that OKC team has a lot of big men. And I feel like they've been battle tested, and pretty much their whole roster has been intact. So I know they're both 8 seeds in the West and the East, as per my opinion. But that's the reason why. That's what I think.
Absolutely,
right?
Absolutely, man. Hey, we're entitled to our own opinion.
Yeah, exactly.
What you got next, man?
Oh, what else? The San Antonio
Spurs,
what?
Right?
The Spurs. Yeah, yeah. Whoa, damn, Fred. Just San Antonio Spurs. How will they do this season? Thanks for reading my mind, then.
No problem, man. Well, I think, you know, David Robinson and Vinny Del Negro are going to do a great job of leading the Spurs team. And Avery Johnson at point. Oh, wait. This isn't 1997? Oh. Who's on the team now? LaMarcus Aldridge. Sorry, man.
They got David Lee.
I'm trying to go back to the last time Tim Duncan wasn't around, man. I mean, it's hard to talk about the Spurs without the big fundamentals. And in any event, I'm sorry. I apologize, Spurs fans. You know, Kawhi Leonard and LaMarcus Aldridge and Tony Parker and, listen, blah, blah, blah. The Spurs, they're going to get 50 wins.
Oh, I agree.
They're going to get at least 50 wins
again. No way they're not.
Greg Popovich is the best coach in the NBA, hands down. Not even
a contest. Yeah.
There is no debate. The Spurs are going to lull you to sleep with a quietly impressive regular season. Don't be surprised if Kawhi Leonard's going to be mentioned among MVP candidates, as he'll average a quiet, you know, 26-9-2 and continues to be that premier defensive player. I'm hoping that he'll actually get some NBA All-Star love this year.
Man.
I mean, for some reason, he just can't.
It's probably because he doesn't smile.
But I absolutely see the Spurs winning their, you know, traditional 50-ish wins, and they'll be the number 2 seed out West, and that's my prediction.
I think overall,
they're
going to be one of the 4 teams in the West with 50 wins, for sure. I know they lost Duncan, they lost David West, but I think they have David Lee, LaMarcus Aldridge, Tony Parker, Paul Gasol, Kawhi Leonard, Bonner, Patty Mills, and Andre Miller. Holy crap! Oh my goodness! I was googling San Antonio Spurs roster. Just going through it, I see Andre Miller. Oh, jeez, that guy's been in the league forever. That's awesome.
This is like the sequel to Last Vegas with Morgan Freeman, De Niro, and Michael Douglas. It's like, how many old guys can you put in a uniform?
I just googled this right now. I had to scroll to the right, and Andre Miller's like the last person on the roster.
Last but the oldest, Andre Miller
Bleacher Report. The Spurs are going to try to trade LaMarcus Aldridge in midseason. So that should be interesting. Yeah, check it out when you get some time. What are you, shocked right now?
No, I'm sorry. I'm laughing because I'm thinking of what 38-year-old that they could trade him for, but I don't want to come off as like the biggest ageist in the room
I'll send it to you on Twitter, but I read it today briefly at like 4:40. That's why I didn't want to post it on here. I just thought it would be too much. There's just too much rumors going on right now. I told you, it's like next week is the NBA season, so all these rumors will be shut down for like at least 3 months. So, I mean, we'll see what happens.
2 weeks.
But I think
maybe 2 days. I think the rumors get shut down for like 2 days. And then they just fire right back up when people completely overreact to if the Warriors go 1-1 or something.
Exactly.
Like that.
So with that being said, I think they're going to be 50 win team. They're not going to win the finals or anything. They'll make it to the West Finals, likely. They're coached by Greg Popovich. Until Greg Popovich leaves, he's like Bill Belichick. You know, that guy, they're going to be making the playoffs. They're going to be doing well. So anything else?
It's almost my bedtime. I feel like a Spur right now. It's about 8:15, so I'm late for my warm glass of milk. All right, that's my last age joke.
Didn't. All right, we're doing good on time, Fred. Congratulations.
Hey, thank you, buddy.
And we wasted the first 2 minutes talking about our days. So with that being said,
and we hit you with a small talk
and
alert.
You cut me off with the Spurs question. All right, let's go to the last question. What are your dark horses for this season? Name 3.
Okay. Dark horse. Seabiscuit. I'm trying to think of a Disney movie with another
Fred,
dark horse.
This is airtime, okay? You can't be wasting time with this.
Okay, all right, I'm
done.
Don't Donald Trump this.
Answer the question.
Dark horse. Indiana Pacers.
Ooh,
Indiana
good
Pacers
pick.
Are my number one dark horse. I've been high on
good
them.
Pick.
ever since the offseason, and I saw a lot of their player movement. I know people think they're going to be a horrible defensive team. Guess what? It's the NBA. There's about 25 of them. So I love the Indiana Pacers. I love the fact that they have a superstar and go-to clutch player in Paul George. And I love the fact that there are other guys on the team that can create
Jefferson, CJ Miles. Who else? Jeff Teague.
Monte Ellis. Thaddeus Young. So, and then they also traded, you already said, Jeff Teague. So exactly, man. So I love what this team can do offensively. And honestly, that's what matters when you're going against,
Indiana.
Cleveland Cavaliers in the playoffs. I'm going to go ahead and say that they are going to be, well, they can't be the number two seed because they're in the Central Division with the Cavaliers. So I guess that means they can only be the fourth seed. That'll be their highest ability. And I'm going to say they will be a 52-win team.
That's high. I didn't expect that, man.
This is a motivated team this year. They feel really good about themselves. I know this because, well, I hang out with them.
Let's go to the next one. What's your next one?
Cleveland's just going to be 55 wins. In regards to my second sleeper team, we both, I think, are in agreement with this. The Milwaukee Bucks, man. I think the Central Division is going to be nasty, bro. In regards to the Milwaukee Bucks, we've talked about their length, their ability to have versatility, to switch on screens defensively and offensively. It's just going to be a whole lot of player movement. They're not just going to be a team that depends on the three-point shot. And I just love the fact that they can come at you in waves. They're almost too deep at every single position. My prediction for their record, because I think there's going to be a little bit of a learning curve. They've had to make some last-second moves in acquiring Michael Beasley and Tony Snell. I think they're going to be a 45-win team.
No, I agree with that.
But remember, I had the eighth seed being a 38-win team. So that still puts them around that six-seed range, which is perfectly fine. But if they were to play a team, say, like Boston in the first round, that's where you can see it can pay off a lot of dividends for them because they just have this amoeba defense where there's no set position and they can guard just about anybody on the court. My third dark horse team will be the Los Angeles. No, I'm just kidding. I will not hit you with a Lakers dark horse pick, even though I am a huge homer. I'm going to go with...
Just Ron Artest.
Meta World Peace? Yeah, no, I'm going to go with the Minnesota Timberwolves. Right. I know I clowned you when you had them as a fifth seed in your, you know, early season prediction.
I think they're
going to
be good.
The Western Conference standings. I like them. I said Oklahoma would be the seventh seed at 41-41. I actually have the Minnesota Timberwolves being the eighth seed at the same record, but OKC owning the tiebreaker. That's the only reason why that they will finish ahead of them. But in regards to Tom Thibodeau being able to coach a player like Karl Anthony Towns, who I feel will be the next superstar in this league, who is extremely coachable, you know, Andrew Wiggins, who I think will be a great number two to Karl Anthony Towns and his ability to continue to improve, Zach LaVine. I love the drafting of Dunn out of Providence. I still think they're going to get rid of Ricky Rubio at some point in time this season. But Shabazz Muhammad and Gorgui Jang, there's so many different guys, and I'm probably just completely butchered Dang's in the last name, but I love this team. I love the young talent that they've accrued. I love the fact that this team seems extremely cohesive, and I think Tom Thibodeau can absolutely play these guys the heavy minutes that he's notorious for playing his starters. So those are my three dark horses. Jimbo,
you're up. Well, I agree with you on the Bucks. I think they'll have a 47-win season. I think the East is a bit weaker. With that being said, I think they'll be 47 wins. I mean, can you imagine if they had Middleton, what their record would be?
They'd be pushing a good solid 48 wins, for sure.
Shut up.
And no, I don't say that as a joke. I'm dead serious when I say that.
I think they'd be a 50-plus.
Yeah, close.
50-plus with the Bucks because they're in the East. And I had OKC as a dark horse, 41-win season. I think everyone thinks they're going to be a debacle, but I think Westbrook's going to be lit up. Oladipo. I think Donovan's going to figure out how to play those two and with a bunch of bigs around. They're going to do well, and a lot of other players will have to be able to step up, and we'll see how it goes. But I'm rooting for Westbrook, man, the underdog mentality and whatnot. So, you know, I think they're going to do well. I think they're going to be the eighth seed. And my last one will be the Houston Rockets, Mike D'Antoni Rockets, with a load of talent. He finally gets a point guard, a competent point guard in James Harden. And he actually was a two guard. He went to a one. I think they'll be a 48-win team. They got Ryan Anderson, Eric Gordon, got to be healthy. But, I mean, they're going to see a lot of inflated stats from 1 to 15. KJ Daniels, I don't know if you saw a couple of I've seen a couple of preseason games with them, but they're doing well. And I think Mike D'Antoni's finally found a team that he can actually play well with. So, yeah, you might not agree with me.
Oh,
but
I don't. I don't, but listen, this is you and your Dark
Easy
Horse
there,
segment,
Skip
so
Bayless.
I'm respecting it, but my God, I know I said that there were 25 bad teams defensively in the NBA, but topping that list will be the Houston Rockets and their OLED defense.
Dude, let me tell you something. Harden's going to average 28 and 12. Maybe 28 and 11, actually. Ryan Anderson's going to average like 20 points a game. Eric Gordon is going to be probably like 15 points a game. But I think he's going to be injured for sure. And outside of that,
I think we can bank
they got
on
some,
that.
You know, monkey wrenches, Corey Brewer, KJ Daniels. They got some players, throw some lobs up, little dunk contest, 7 seconds or less. Anything's possible.
Oh, I know what you're doing. The KJ Daniels line, because you know, the prophet, Mr. Axman's a big KJ Daniels fan. You're sucking up to the boss, man. Is that what you're doing?
Listen,
right,
man,
now
I love KJ
segment?
Daniels. I drafted him last year. And that was completely bad. It failed for me because it was my last roster spot. And he played no minutes at all. He ended up getting 6 fouls in a game for DeAndre Drummond. He was like a human, you know, he basically wanted to just commit fouls. And, you know, I hope he does well. He has opportunities, Mike D'Antoni's offense. Listen, D'Antoni has made a lot of players a lot of money. And I feel like the Rockets will be 48 wins. You watch. You don't believe me, do you?
I'll watch.
Oh man, no, we'll remember this.
I'm
gonna write this
on my
pad
ways.
Right now. Episode 7, Fred doubts me.
I doubt the Houston Rockets. I can't say that I doubt you, man, but I definitely doubt the Ryan Anderson's gonna average 20 points
a
game.
I'm not crazy, dude. It's not ridiculous. They have no one else on that team.
I know, but it's the fact that he becomes the guy. You didn't even mention Clint Capella or Patrick Beverley. I at least respect those guys before you even say, you know, Eric Gordon's going to average 15 points a game, which isn't far-reaching, but he's also only going to play about 39 games this season because that's about average.
These guys are
going to
average like 115 points a game.
You know what? You didn't poke holes in my dark horses. I am sorry that I'm doing the same for you, brother. And you know what? We are at 49 and a half minutes right now.
Did you hear that?
Right now,
he doesn't believe in KJ Daniels. He doesn't believe in Lance either.
You know what, Chris? You can fire me if that's the case. Because I am not jumping out the window for KJ Daniels.
We're at the 50-minute mark. We've made some adjustments to this podcast. So we're about to go on a close for the next 2 minutes. Fred, you got anything, buddy?
Man, always got a whole lot, brother. You know, as always, please check us out on Facebook, the Flagrant Take Podcast fan page. Continue to like the page, share the page with your friends. Don't forget to leave questions and comments, man. I absolutely want to hear what you guys have to say out there. Who you feel is completely way off base in their predictions, man. Please, let's discuss. Let's embrace debate, as they say at the Four Letter Network. As always, you can find me on Twitter. Flagrant Take Fred. You can find the website www.flagranttake.com where I am completely just spewing venom all over my Cincinnati Bengals, including Marvin Lewis. We won't get into this right now. Snapchat Fredro, Fredro underscore 1186. And hit me up on Instagram. I believe it's, I don't know, look for me. Anyway, Jimbo, what
Listen,
you
man,
got,
the
brother?
Jets are 1-5, I think. So don't talk about your Cincinnati Bengals. There's some teams out there that are doing quite honestly worse than you, okay? I love you, Fitzy. Anyway, you guys can get at me at NYJones7. Call me James is the title. You can get on me on Instagram, you name it, Snapchat, whatever you guys want to do. Leave me comments. I know you guys talk to me all the time on Twitter. We got to shout out some other ones from our network. Three in the Key. I just spoke to those guys. Those three handsome Canadians, but not as handsome as us. So, with that being said, The Fast Break, The Historian, check it out. Chris Axman's own podcast, Almighty Podcast. I don't even know why I'm marketing his stuff, but yeah, Chris, here's your plug.
As if he needed it. He has like 24,000 followers. I think we have a combined like 17.
Exactly, exactly.
yo, shout out Daddy Yo and the guys at Sorry If I Spit When I Speak. I need to come on and have my therapy session, fellas. We gotta talk some more stripes. But again, yes, shout out to the three wise men from north of the border, man. Three in the key. Hopefully we get a chance to chop it up with you guys soon. My boy Blake on, Fast Break, man. I want to definitely chop up some hip-hop and NBA with you, man. But again, check out the whole network, man. As I always tell you, there is no drop-off from show to show.
Jimbo, let's get out of here, man.
Week 7 in the books.
We did good, brother. On time. Peace.
Y'all take care, man. Thank you again for your continued support, y'all. Peace and love.